Young man, I know precisely what a V-sign means. It's a vulgar, though rather effective, insult. In this case, the insult is directed at the self-serving yes-men who sit in the House of Commons and on the board of the British Transport Commission. Not only that, I reminded him, the V-sign also signifies victory, a gesture popularized by Winston Churchill. The young man I was berating was a newshound. He had been referring to the large letter V that Stella, Jennifer and I had embroidered onto a huge banner. It was on display at the village railway station, where the fighting committee had organised a grand publicity event to advertise our plans for the Bluebell line. Both platforms were thronged with people, and both the local and the national press were out in force. "Victory, Miss Bessemer!" the reporter sneered. "Victory! From the middle of next month, the railway closes for good. Surely you have to admit that despite your committee's gallant efforts, the battle has been lost." "A battle lost with honour," I retorted. "The government and British Transport Commission may have achieved their object, but they have done so in a manner which reflects little credit on themselves," I declared. Less than a month later, I stood on the platform at East Grinstead Station, waiting for what was billed by British Railways as being, once again, the last ever train to run on the Bluebell line. I made my way through the great throng of people who had come to pay their last respects and saw Mickey standing excitedly by the locomotive. The V for Victory banner that the girls and I had embroidered now hung triumphantly from what Mickey informed me was the engine's firebox. We had also made 100 blue V-signs for passengers to wave from the carriage windows. The train was running late. The coupling up of the 3 additional carriages that were needed to accommodate as many as possible of the thousands or so waiting passengers had not yet been completed. The booking office had long since run out of tickets. BBC and ITN newsreel crews were scurrying about purposefully as I boarded the train. I could hear one of the reporters addressing the nation's television viewers. "Jolly sightseers have flocked to this quintessential country station to watch the last train depart. For some here, though, this is a sad occasion, marking the passing of a bygone age. For them, it is nothing more than a funeral procession, and they stand quietly, heads bowed and hats in hand." Some of these mourners had given me surreptitious winks as I'd passed along the platform. They were, in fact, some of my latest recruits to the fighting committee. "Complete and utter nonsense, of course, Miss Bessemer." One of our recruitment leaflets was being waved under my nose. "Bluebell Railway? Can you honestly imagine British Railways, nationalised, socialist British Railways, agreeing to let a private railway run on their metals?" "One lives in hope, Major Prothero," I replied, without, I have to say, much confidence. The Major was right. Was it really likely that British Railways would let a preserved railway line use its tracks? The guard blew his whistle. Silence descended as Percy Lummock from the town silver band played the last post. Then, as the engine let off steam and began to inch forward, an almighty cheer went up. Earlier, signalmen had placed fog signals all along the line. Their bangs were echoed by fireworks that were let off by local youngsters gathered at regular intervals along the trackside. At Lewes, as the crowds gradually departed, I saw a London commuter carrying the ubiquitous rolled-up umbrella and briefcase hurrying down the footbridge towards me. He tipped his trilby. "Miss Bessemer, glad to have caught you." He spoke with a soft Sussex burr. "Holden's the name. I'm in the Southern Region office up in town." My heart sank. Yet another self-important gentleman, keen to patronise me over the silly idea I had that British Railways were going to roll over and let a private railway run on their precious track. To my surprise, however, Mr. Holden produced a disarming smile. "Any help I can give you with this Bluebell line idea of yours, do let me know. Getting BR to allow a preserve railway to run on their lines will not be an easy task, but I have some thoughts. Please remember, though, any help I give will have to be incognito. BR would see any contact I have with you Bluebell line people as fraternizing with the enemy. Sackable offence." "Why, thank you, Mr. Holden," I managed to stammer. "How can I contact you?" "I'd rather you didn't, and certainly not at work. Don't worry, I'll know how to find you when the time comes." And with that, he turned on his heel and walked away, just as Mickey and Jennifer sidled up. "Who was that?" asked Jennifer. "I'm afraid I can't reveal his name," I told her. Mickey stared after the departing figure of Mr. Holden. "That's Bernard Holden, isn't it? He drops into the Model Railway Club from time to time. He knows everything there is to know about railways. Well, he would, wouldn't he? He's logistics manager up at Waterloo. What was he talking to you about?" "All I can reveal is that he has, as of this moment, crossed over from the other side," I replied abstrusely. "Where are Dennis and Stella?" "Dennis has given Stella a lift home on his scooter," Jennifer explained, in a tone that failed to disguise a somewhat more significant meaning. "Then no doubt you and Mickey would appreciate a ride home in Annie. She's parked just round the corner in Priory Street." We spent the summer and winter months making plans and agreed that the first public meeting of the Lewis and East Grinstead Railway Preservation Society would be held in the following spring. I, of course, would chair it. Quite what fevered activity took place at that first public meeting when it dawned on those present that the chairwoman was absent without leave, I can only imagine. No doubt my telephone was ringing furiously. I didn't know, and I didn't care. I was walking contentedly along the Bluebell path. After all, I had the church flowers to pick for Sunday. I was busy arranging a vase of daffodils in the south transept window when I heard the west door creak open. The sound of light footsteps echoing down the aisle grew slowly louder. "Miss Bessemer!" "Hello, Jennifer. I wondered if you'd find me here." "It wasn't difficult. Annie's parked outside on the verge. What's happened? Everyone at the meeting was going frantic." "I decided that the business of running a railway is not for me," I explained. "There are plenty of good, experienced people available to take over the reins."
"But you could have let us know," Jennifer protested.
I shrugged. I didn't want the fuss. Everyone would have been imploring me to continue as chairwoman. Though deep down I wondered if that was actually true, if all those loud, pushy male railway enthusiasts really would have wanted a woman running their show.
"So you're not going to be involved with the railway at all?" Jennifer asked.
I shook my head. "No, I think not." Jennifer sighed. "Me neither. I'm going to stay on at school. Mum doesn't know this, so don't dare breathe a word, but I've decided not to become a student nurse and marry a doctor like she wants. After A-levels, I'm going to apply to the London School of Economics to read politics." "What are you looking at?" Jennifer had caught me staring up at a large marble tablet on the transept wall. "In loving memory of Lieutenant Roland St. John Anstruther Jones, 13th Battalion, Royal Sussex Regiment. Killed in action, Richebourg, 30th of June, 1916. Aged 21.
His regiment was all but wiped out, I said quietly. Jennifer nodded. I know. They called it the day Sussex died. Grandpa told me all about it. Was he your secret fiancé you told me about? I nodded. Roland's people, well, you can see from the surname, they would have been appalled to discover that their son was walking out with the Bessemer girl. This is their family memorial to him. My memorial to him, of course, is the Bluebell Path. That is where we walked and talked and more. And it is where I last saw him, waving madly at me from a railway carriage on his way to France. Just over a year later, hundreds of people turned up to witness the opening of the Bluebell Railway at Sheffield Park Station. I'd parked Annie a little way up the hill from where I could watch the celebrations. As the train had departed on its maiden journey, a trip of a few hundred yards in what Dennis would no doubt insist on calling the up direction, the crowds began to thin out. It was then I saw a young couple setting out down the Bluebell Path. For a moment, my eyes blurred. With a start, I recognised the young man, clearly. It was Roland. I couldn't see the young woman's face. She was looking up into Roland's eyes. But the dress, a pale blue hobble skirt, I recognised straight away. I'd bought it in Liberty's with money my father had given for my 19th birthday. My eyes were watery, and when I blinked, I saw that I'd been mistaken. The two young people were bending down to pick flowers, and I realised that they were dressed in 1950s attire. They stood up and, smiling, took each other's hands and set off again. I recognised them then, Jennifer and Mickey, taking the first of, no doubt, many such walks. Walks that they would hold in their memories for ever. Walks along what would soon become their very own precious Bluebell Path.